You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. Our top story, of course, the rapidly developing situation in central China after an earthquake yesterday, 7.9 on the Richter scale. And Chinese media within the last 2 hours has begun reporting that 18,000 people are believed buried and trapped, their fate unknown, in a city very, very close to the epicenter. The death toll has topped 12,000 at this point. And as we've spoken about already in the hour, we have a political story here. We have, of course, a humanitarian disaster, but we also have a geological story. And joining us now is Roger Billam, who's a professor of geological sciences at the University of Colorado at Boulder. This is a very active plate tectonic zone in the Chengdu area. Roger Billam has been to Chengdu and has done extensive research there, both on the geography and the changes that have taken place in the last 30 years when the last earthquake occurred. Professor Billam, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, a lot of people, you know, may have the impression that China in this part of Sichuan, and it once was, but maybe not today, is very rural, very sort of primitive as far as infrastructure is concerned. But in fact, 87 million people or more live here. And combined with the fact that it's right on the edge of two very, very active plates, this is a combination that could conceivably spell disaster, even above the death toll that we've already seen. True?
Well, yes. What's happening here is that the Tibetan Plateau, is being extruded. It's being pushed eastwards over the plain that Chengdu's sitting on. And the rate is about 10 millimeters a year. So the calculations from the earthquake records yesterday suggest that the earthquake slipped on average about 5 meters, which suggests that these earthquakes happen about every 500 years. And in fact, there was a very large earthquake in the region in 1933.
And with the amount of building that's taken place in Sichuan, I mean, this is a boom town. Some places are called like the Detroit of China. There are auto factories there. We've already heard of the destruction of an ammonia plant yesterday that caused all sorts of contamination of populated areas. I mean, it's a very different situation than 1976. And how vulnerable are people in these populated areas?
Well, the vulnerability is proportional to the strength of the buildings they live in. One of the problems is in the current building boom in China is that a lot of buildings have gone up. We're not sure how many had earthquake resistance. Of course, it's beginning to emerge that a lot of that construction is, in fact, inadequate to cope with strong shaking. One of the, what we've noticed in the past 50 years is the doubling of population is resulting in huge construction plans all over the planet. And the problem areas are those areas that have earthquakes like most of the Chinese or central China, parts of India, the Himalaya and so on. These areas often put earthquake-resistant construction at a very low priority because there are other problems. In China, this really shouldn't be the case because they have had a very strong earthquake program for many decades.
I mean, it's actually shocking to hear that a 7-story school collapsed to a pile of rubble 6 inches high or even a little bit more than that.
Well, it would be a little bit more, but your point is well taken. One of the things that earthquake engineers always try to guarantee is the availability of strength in schools, hospitals, and fire stations. And what we're looking at now is something that's sort of endemic in the third world that those structures are not strong enough, and they should be.
Professor Billam, we understand there's been roughly 300 aftershocks. Is that surprising to you? And what would you be expecting as someone who's studied this area?
No, the number of aftershocks is pretty typical. This is a huge earthquake. It's not a great earthquake. You require a magnitude. It needs to be about an 8 to be a great earthquake, so we haven't quite reached that. But this earthquake is of the sort that if it had hit Chengdu directly, would have resulted in a huge death toll. Right now, the death toll is around about 10,000. My feeling is it's probably going to rise, because typically when you have large populations visited by an earthquake very close to it, if you had a direct hit on a city, you can kill as many as 12% of the population.
Roger Billum, thanks a lot. Roger Billum, of course, is a professor of geological sciences at the University of Colorado Boulder. Adora?
And as you said at the top of this segment, the death toll from the devastating quake in China is nearing 12,000. At least two Chinese-American tourists are counted among the missing. Officials expect the death toll to rise as the search continues for thousands of people buried in the rubble. There's pressure on organizers at this time of the Beijing Olympics to alter or suspend the Olympic torch relay, which was actually scheduled to pass through the affected area next month. Joining us now is Michael Bristow, a correspondent for the BBC, and he is just north of Chengdu, China. And Michael Bristow, what are you seeing?
Well, thank you. Just to follow up on one of the comments your contributors made there about the state of Chinese modern buildings. In actual fact, I'm in a city called Dujiangyan, which is about 30 miles north of Chengdu. I'm about 50 miles away from the epicenter of the earthquake. And in this city, most of the buildings have remained standing, and most of those that are standing are quite modern buildings, although and most of those that seem to have collapsed in the center of the city were the older buildings, although I must say I did see some newer buildings, some apartment blocks that people haven't even moved into yet that had cracks in them and hadn't fallen down, but they had certainly been damaged by the earthquake. So a mixed message there about the construction of new Chinese buildings.
Well, how would you describe the people that you've encountered? Describe what they've been telling you.
Well, the people are pretty scared. I mean, I'm looking around. I mean, it's nightfall now. There's a torrential rain falling. And I'm looking around, and the houses and the apartment blocks around me are completely empty. People have just evacuated them. As another one of your contributors has just mentioned there, there's been a number of aftershocks. We felt quite a large one earlier on today. In fact, there was one, again, just about half an hour ago. People just don't want to stay in their houses. So they've set up this makeshift camp along the side where I'm sitting now of a tent. Well, most of them aren't even tents. They're just pieces of plastic which they've strung between trees and a large umbrella, anything really, just to keep off this torrential rain. So they're quite scared, and a lot of people actually left the area and headed back to Chengdu. And earlier on today, we heard that there was going to be a very, very large aftershock, and people were quite scared and tried to get out of the city as quickly as possible.
Michael, do you have any details on this state media report that 18,000 people are buried nearby to where you are? Any details?
I don't have any details about that, unfortunately. I'm in one place, and I can tell you what I've seen and what it is around me. But what I can say is that it's information seems to be coming out very, very slowly, because although the emergency services have managed to get to the city where we are here now, it's quite a low-lying area. There's a good road, a good expressway between Chengdu and Dujiangyan. And further up the road, into the foothills of the Tibet-Qinghai Plateau, it gets higher, the roads are less good, there's been landslides, and rescue services have found it very, very difficult to actually get there. So I think today they only managed to get there today, and the first people to get there managed to arrive on foot. They had to get there on foot. So there's probably lots of people still buried, still trapped, and unfortunately that have died that we haven't heard of yet.
Many struggles ahead. Michael Bristow, correspondent for the BBC, thank you very much for joining us from Chengdu, China. Adora?
We're going to turn now to Andrew Jacobs of the New York Times, who's monitoring things from Beijing. Andrew, thanks for being with us. And tell us a little bit about this efforts by the Chinese government, which they've been very vocal about and transparent, it seems, in detailing exactly what they are trying to do to help all of these people who are in dire need.
Well, it's pretty massive effort. About 50,000 soldiers have been sent there, and thousands of other medics and rescue workers. And in contrast to, it seems, the past disasters, it's a pretty well-organized and well-publicized effort.
How would you describe the coverage of state media of what's happening?
It's It's very similar to what you might see in, during disaster in the States. You know, it's wall, endless coverage. A lot of reporters from the Chinese media are out there giving live broadcasts from the scene. People I talk to, analysts say it's pretty unprecedented. Foreign reporters have been, as long as they can get there, they're allowed to get there. On the internet, lots of homemade video taken on cell phone.
Well, Andrew, it's amazing. It's amazing to see how this unfolds. We're going to have to go, but thank you very much. Andrew Jacobs, correspondent for The New York Times in Beijing.
And we're going to continue following that story in China. And we're still asking you just to switch completely what's on your personal endangered list. And you can tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can send us an email at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
All sorts of things on our website. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.